Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Elevated Places with Dr. Ava Mahan. Dr. Ava is a gifted attorney, researcher, lecturer, and author of 5 books. She received her Juris Doctorate from Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., and is a member of the New York Bar Association. Dr. Ava has been featured in Essence magazine many times and was named by Essence as being one of America's most powerful black women. Join Dr. Ava every Thursday evening on Elevated Places, where you will hear a message that will provide you with the tools needed to repair and uplift the spirit, moral character, and living condition of the black man and woman. Our call-in number is 347-324-5091. Or visit us on our radio show page at blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces. And now, here is your host, Dr. Ava Muhammad.
Assalamu alaikum. Peace be unto you. Welcome back to the Elevated Places. It is a pleasure to be with you. I am your host, Ava Muhammad, and we are just full of happiness and joy as the unfolding of the fullness of time takes place. To be able to live in this hour and be with the man who is giving us truth and divine guidance, we cannot ask for a better blessing. And so call us and join tonight's discussion, which will be absolutely fascinating as well as empowering, and call us at 347-324-5091. That's 347-324-5091. Now, there is so much going on and so much to cover in this hour tonight, hour and a half, 90 minutes, that we're going to get right to it. And, of course, joining me on the phone, I'm so blessed to have two brilliant minds that anchor this program. One is my co-host, Brother Terrence Muhammad, and the other is our Elevated Places contributor and analyst, Dr. Ridgely Muhammad. And to both of you, assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum salam, ma'am.
Walaikum salam.
All right. Wonderful to have you. And in a few moments, we're going to be joined by a brother who is just a brilliant scholar, researcher, a member of the Nation of Islam research team. You will know who he is when he comes on. I'm going to save that for a minute. And if you haven't heard him before, just prepare yourself for an incredible eye-opening evening. But before that, Brother Terrence Muhammad, why don't you bring us up to date on what's going on?
Well, you know, there's a lot going on, and I really just want to get right into this discussion tonight, but I want to touch on just a couple of points, and then we'll move right into it. I know tonight we're going to discuss that missing object in the air. We know we have identified flying objects over our head, but there was a particular object that came off the Earth's surface and off the Earth's ground and went up in the air, and some people are still looking for it. And we're going to talk about tonight that missing plane. And it bears witness to what we're going to talk about tonight, defending Farrakhan. Also, the Twitter army is not stopping, and we want to remind everybody the time and what must be done. Lecture series by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, the 58 series lectures. We want to make sure that you go back and watch all of them, study them, have parties or invite people over to your homes, your family, and watch the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. You can have a whole lecture series every week for a whole another year where you can go and watch it for an hour and have an hour discussion and enjoy the guidance from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan from his series, The Time and What Must Be Done, at NOI.org. Also, our Twitter army is not stopping. Our Twitter army is still on the move. Matter of fact, while we're having this conference call, the Twitter army is gearing up, and they're having a conference call tonight, and they're standing strong to make sure that the word of Minister Farrakhan is continuing to get out. We thank Brother Jesse, and if you have not gotten your copy of the teachings 2.0, the Twitter sayings of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, you need to get that book. And please go get that book. And you can get that at store.finalcall.com, store.finalcall.com. Get your Teachings 2.0, Twitter Sands of Minister Louis Farrakhan. And also, don't forget that the Final Call newspaper is going digital, so go to digital.finalcall.com to get your copy. And we thank the Final Call because it displays so much wonderful and good news across the country. And there's one particular article about our brother Charles X from Pittsburgh, and I'm just highlighting that because we do have a prison reform ministry, and we have examples of those that have been incarcerated that are doing major things, big things, and that brother is doing so much work. He's a master trainer. He works with children. He works with young people, adolescents, juveniles, and there's a lot going on throughout our nation because of these teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Minister Louis Farrakhan. And also, we want to make sure that we also know that at Savior's Day, we had the Emerging Leaders Workshop, and those particular emerging leaders, I heard from our brother Hassan Muhammad out of New York, saying that the youth are still continuing to build and strategize and work out their emerging leadership things, and they're continuing in this work. So it wasn't just one workshop. They're continuing on that push. And we all want to remind everybody to go to avaspeaks.com, avaspeaks.com, because as we're talking tonight about defending Farrakhan, she has a lecture. We got to find it. We got to put it back out, Dr. Ava. The Last Man Standing.
And
yeah, that lecture is powerful. And I say that only because, as we know, last week we laid to rest and made our brother, Brother Chokwe, down in Jackson, Mississippi, and you can read about his ceremony in the latest edition of The Final Call. But it's a beautiful thing when we defend Minister Farrakhan. It's not that he only represents the Nation of Islam, but he represents black people all across this planet. And we have seen him, his love, his generosity, taking care of funeral services, taking care of people going to school, to colleges, whatever our people need, he is always there. Organization, James Steele. So we're going to hear about people that have defended Minister Farrakhan and things that they have spoken about him and his good works and his good name. And we're just happy to be here on Elevated Places with one of the greatest defenders, legal defenders, spiritual defenders, heavyweight champions for the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, our host for tonight, Dr. Ava Muhammad. Turn it back over to you.
Well, thank you so much, Brother Terrence, and I appreciate your coverage of the critical issues of the hour. While we await our guest arrival, and of course the overreaching subject of the hour is defending Farrakhan, representing Farrakhan, understanding, knowing, following Farrakhan, because Allah has chosen him as the door, as the way to our salvation. That is no more debatable any longer than the existence of the mother plane. It is a fact. It is a reality. We hope that everyone will obtain, if you have not already, a copy of the current edition of the Final Call newspaper, March 18th, 2014. Headline, Disclosure, Revealing the Truth About UFOs. And it contains an interview that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan did back in 2011. And those of you that attended 2011 Savior's Day know that the minister called in experts from all over the world on the subject of the existence of UFOs. And there were literally, I think, 7,000 people in attendance at the plenary session here in Chicago. And the minister was interviewed by Dr. Jamie Masson on Disclosure Interview. I think everybody needs to read that interview.
Yes.
Because one of the things the minister promised was to expose the existence of UFOs, to explain, as he told the interviewer, he would answer the question, what are they?
why are they here? Why have they been over all the atomic installations, not only in America, but all over the world? Why has the power from these so-called unidentified flying objects been able to nullify the power of rockets to go up in case there is an atomic warfare? And Dr. Masson asked the minister, now listen to this question, are you, in your position, going to ask the American government to open the files, like other countries have done, around this, quote, extraterrestrial or so-called wheels phenomenon? What is going to be the official position of the Nation of Islam? And I'm not going to read the minister's entire response, because you know how the minister's answers are. They're lectures.
That's right.
And but he opened up his answer with this: it doesn't make any difference to me whether they open them or don't open them, because it's going to be so evident. These wheels will be seen by the American people by the millions in a few days. So whether they open the files or not, how can you continue to lie in the face of the people, seeing with their eyes what you have been trying to hide? And, of course, we know that the minister went on not only to openly demand the opening of the files, but in the time and what must be done, he said to the world and then carried it through. He said, if they won't tell, I will. And he remains to this moment the singular voice, not in America, but on the planet Earth, who is offering an explanation of this phenomenon. The only one.
That's right.
So while we wait for our guests to come on, Dr. Ridgely, Brother Terrence, I think we need to I'm not sure what that was. We need to get into maybe
that was somebody letting know we're getting tapped into.
Tapped into. Oh,
right.
Good.
But as Brother Terrence noted in the opening, and I spoke about it on the WVON program on Sunday, because it had not occurred last Thursday.
Right.
But all of us are captivated, and our minds and brains are swirling over the disappearance of Flight 370 out of Malaysia. Malaysia Airlines was on its way from Kuala Lumpur to Beijing, China, almost a week ago, and vanished, literally vanished out of the sky. There have been 13 nations searching for not even the plane, but some evidence of the plane. And they have not even found a piece of tissue paper that could be said to have come from that aircraft. There is no way that we who follow the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad cannot be affected by this, not only because obviously there's a concern over 250 passengers and crew on that plane, but we know on another level that for 58 weeks on the time and what must be done, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan warned America, warned all of us, that this is it. We are in the final days of the judgment. And he ended that series with the wheel. And he explained the power, nature, capability, purpose of that wheel. But what he kept emphasizing to America and challenging both the government and the shadow government, he challenged them to respond to his claim that there is a superior power above our heads.
Ooh, that's right.
And my view, and I want the callers to call in and share their thoughts, because like you said to me, we were talking earlier today, Dr. Ridgely and I, we're just looking too, you know.
right.
We're thinking and talking, but thank Allah, we have a guide.
That's
so
right.
That at least, if nothing else, we know we're in the realm of logic. But in my judgment, opening up this discussion, no matter how this comes out, what has been demonstrated to the people of the earth is that there is a power that is superior to the white man's.
Mm.
That's right.
As each day passes, rather than grow closer to resolution, they are growing more confused.
And you know, Dr. Ava, the interesting thing that you said, the whole issue of there being a power greater, and that's one of the things that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has been teaching us, is just when we're dealing with the mindset of this people, the mindset of this government, that they do not want to accept the reality of any power greater than they are. And I say that because myself and Sister Andrea, that you know usually takes pictures for the final call, attended, as I mentioned, I think last year during the summer, international conference on UFOs. And I was, you know, once again, I was amazed that it was in my city. But the one brother that said he came here for the first time, they from Chile, for the first time into the United States, you know, he said he can't really say it. You know, we had a side conversation. He said it's funny how, you know, people are not releasing these files. He said it's funny how y'all have so much trouble with y'all government. He said because in our country, just about 80% of the people believe. You know, we see it. And he said, well, maybe, you know, because we're such a third world country, or maybe since we're so poor and so impoverished that we welcome any kind of help or any kind of technology that will help make it better for us. And he was saying that in a joking manner. And basically he was saying that America is so arrogant and so of themselves that they don't believe or want to acknowledge that there's a greater power or there's a God greater than them. So they can't accept or they don't want nobody else to know, because then that will take away their superiority.
Yeah, it looks like if we look through history, and of course we need to always study scripture as we live through the final days. You know, the sequence of events when Jehovah sent Moses to Pharaoh, and you begin to see merge in how Allah deals with his enemies, and as almost like a last ditch effort to save those of us who are really nothing but spectators and can either choose to follow the winner or the loser. That's our option. This really this is not our battle. This is a battle over us. And what you do with your opponent is, first and foremost, is shake up your opponent's self-image.
Come on.
And, you know, Muhammad Ali used to do that with his opponents, you know, way before the fight itself. And he was the first one to do that. Way before the scheduled fight, he would describe how he was going to destroy his opponent.
Right.
He would talk about how long it would take, how many rounds, what he was going to do to his face. Okay. And God forbid it was one of these Negroes that refused to call him Muhammad Ali after the Honorable Elijah Muhammad named him and kept calling him Cassius Clay. Oh, my God. And he would say, in fact, Floyd Patterson, he named it the Floyd Patterson humiliation fight. Okay. I am not only going to defeat him, that's a given, that I'm going to beat him, but I am going to humiliate him for calling me out of my name. And what we see unfolding before our eyes is the humiliation of Satan.
Right.
The humiliation of that rebel and enemy against God, who has convinced the whole earth that he is the greatest power in the universe. And Allah is just getting started. Master Farad Muhammad, he's just getting started.
Yes.
But we're gonna go further into the discussion of the Malaysian Airlines Flight 370, 777 aircraft. My husband and I flew on one of the first ones rolled out back in 2001 when Minister Farrakhan sent me to London after he had been banned from the UK. That ban still exists. So I went in and said what he would have said. But we flew nonstop from Atlanta to London on the 777. And I am a witness that airplane, we were in business class, it was like being in the lobby of a hotel.
Mm.
This aircraft is enormous. Mm. 200-foot wingspan. Okay, there is no way. When I looked out at that wing, you fly out at night to London, and you always arrive on those European flights in the morning. And I looked out, and it was getting dark, and I couldn't see the end of the wing. It just went on and on, and part of me didn't want to stay on that plane because I didn't feel that it could get up off the ground. Okay, it was that enormous. And as we've learned throughout the week, it is laden with so much technology.
Right.
But we're gonna get back to that in a moment. And Dr. Ridgely, the link that you sent me, because I expressed very early that after sharing with the WVON audience from the Time and What Must Be Done episode 53, where the minister cited the Cuban incident in 1967,
mm-hmm.
where
right.
The U.S. military sighted a metallic object in the sky moving quickly back and forth and sent one of their MiG fighters to go after it. They attempted to communicate, warn it. It would not respond. And orders were given to the lead aircraft to fire on it. And the last thing that the other pilot of the other aircraft heard was him saying, you know, locked and loaded. He was ready to fire. And he suddenly was vaporized.
Oops.
There was no, there was no smoke. There was no fire. There was nothing.
Mm.
Not a remnant. You can't even say disintegrated because that sort of implies little pieces falling to the ground. And Allah tells us in the Holy Quran, he says to his enemy, it will be as though you never existed. And so the only power I've ever heard of that can remove something from this dimension so that it completely vanishes and there's no evidence of it is Allah in the person of Master Farad Muhammad. You know, and so that was my thinking about what's going on with this plane. But Dr. Rizzi gave me some further insight that I'm going to share later. But I see that our guest has, I call him guest, but he's family.
That's right.
But he has taken time from his incredibly busy schedule. And this brother always brings it. Okay, without fail. And I am talking about Brother Dimitrik Muhammad. Brother Dimitrik is a member of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan's legendary research team. He's an author, he's a publisher, researcher, lecturer, and he's already put out 4 books, every one of which you need to have. And these books are In the Light of Scripture, A Complete Dictionary of the Supreme Wisdom Lessons, When You Get in Trouble, Nurse from Your Holy Quran, and his newest title, which we're going to discuss tonight,
mm-hmm.
Who Do They Say I Am?
Woo!
The Vindication of Minister Louis Farrakhan. And as a member of the research team, he's also a frequent guest columnist. If you read, if you don't know who he is, then you're telling us you don't read a Final Call. You're giving yourself away. You're busted.
That's right.
Okay. And his articles appear in the powerful, monumental work Defending Farrakhan, which has actually become a plenary session at Savior's Day. And this brother's been in the nation since 15 years old. And he has been assistant student minister of Muhammad Mosque No. 55 in Memphis under the tutelage of Brother Student Minister Anthony Muhammad. He also regularly lectures at the annual convention, and, of course, that includes the very powerful and central Defending Farrakhan workshop. Of course, besides his work as a lecturer and publisher, he has worked professionally more than 10 years in production management in optics, plastics, and furniture industries, nation-building stuff.
That's
Brother
right.
Dimitrik also serves the Nation of Islam Prison Ministry and has lectured in federal, state, and local correctional institutions throughout the Mid-South. He is a husband of 15 years, father of three children, and he currently is touring the country with the two-day seminar entitled Defending Farrakhan, Preparing the Earth to Swallow the Flood. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Dimitrik Muhammad.
Walaikum salam, Minister Ava. How are you this evening?
Oh, listen, we're fired up over here on Elevated Places.
Woo!
And the only thing missing was you, so we're ready to get it on now.
Well, you know, I'm always so happy and so excited to be on your program, Minister Ava, and you know, just it's just such an honor, it's a privilege to be with you. Goes without saying, you know, such a great admirer of yours over the years. And you know, remember coming in the nation, you know, very young, as you pointed out, nursing on your tapes and your sterling representation of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, which I'm happy to see continue on WVON. When your program began, me not living in Chicago, I had to download the iHeartRadio app so that I could tune into it every Sunday. And now I listen to WVON throughout the week, but, of course, your program is my favorite. So just very excited to be here and look forward to the discussion.
Yes, sir. All right, well, who do they say I am? And, of course, it's we didn't plan it like this, but Allah's God, it happened like this, that there is a book review in the current edition of The Final Call. Brother Terrence and I were talking about that tonight, and I was blessed to get a copy of the book. Actually, I just got it earlier today, and I was sitting with Brother Arif Muhammad, Nation's General Counsel. We were preparing for a meeting with some lawyers, and I'm going through the book, and lo and behold, there he is in the book. He wrote the preface, which is very powerful because it not only lays out the battles that the minister has been engaged in and the propaganda war, the extent of the propaganda war launched against him, but I told Brother Arif, it also offers us a chronology of the rebuilding of the Nation of Islam, because oftentimes we go from the departure of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in 1975, and we're suddenly talking about the 90s, and a lot of people coming in the nation in later years don't know about or appreciate the rebuilding process and how profound that process was. The minister absolutely is not somebody that fell out the sky like Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz. This man is absolutely extraordinary, and this book is yet more profound proof that he is divinely backed. And what you took it upon yourself to do is collect, which I think is so phenomenal, so fabulous, you collected and compiled testimony of this incredibly wide spectrum of people in America to witness the character and the impact and, as you said, immeasurable value of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Tell us how the book came about, Brother Dimitri.
Yes, ma'am. Well, you know, we're very happy and very excited about what Allah has blessed us to put together, because we believe it creates a very powerful counter-narrative to the existing propaganda that surrounds our beloved minister. And at the root of it is a quote by the minister that appears on the back cover, which states, "I wish that my black brothers and sisters would help Brother Farrakhan to get out of prison. I am not in a prison of steel bars. I am in a prison of public opinion, manipulated by the media and their hatred of the truth that is in my mouth that would set our people free. Help me to get out of prison. Stop looking at the Nation of Islam as though we are some enemy to black people." And so that quote, you know, has always really touched me. You know, I work in a correctional environment as a chaplain, ministering unto the needs of our brothers and sisters who find themselves in the prison industrial complex. And so, you know, for our beloved minister to describe himself as being in a prison is just very moving to me, because, you know, I see every day that's a very hostile environment. And so for the minister to figuratively describe his position with relationship to the masses of our people, that there is this barrier that exists between him and the people, we wanted to see if we could provide, again, a counter-narrative to what exists surrounding the minister. And so, you know, we were together maybe a year or so ago, and the minister was talking about, you know, wanting to see his message marketed more widespread. And, of course, whenever there is, you know, the discussion of marketing and you think about products and goods and services and what have you, and one of the things that helps to sell any product or to market any product is testimonials. And so the back cover of the message to the black man gives just a few of some of the testimonials and comments from a diverse group about the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And in my mind, the idea was, well, what if we could do something similar to collect these testimonials about the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan to show the widespread, diverse group of prominent persons who have been compelled to describe the minister and his impact on their life and how they see him having impacted America and the world. So that's just kind of how the idea was born.
Well, this is phenomenal. And as you said, these are prominent individuals, and they're from all walk of life. And these are black people. These are white people. These are Jewish people. These are people in the entertainment world, politicians, scholars. And some of them are, you just said it, that they were compelled to say what they said. These are not a lot of these statements, and I think this is why the book needs to be in people's libraries. These are not fawning, flattery type of commentary. But these are recitations of historical events and circumstances and situations where the speaker or writer was simply compelled, even if they're not a supporter or even a friend of the minister and the Nation of Islam. You know, like I'm looking at Jeffrey Steinberg, who writes, because it's a fact, he writes, the largest peaceful demonstration in American history, the Million Man March, which gathered at the foot of the U.S. Capitol Monday, August 16th, has changed politics in the United States and effectively reflected the growing disgust of the American public with the conservative revolution of House Speaker Newt Gingrich and his allies. The rally was built around a call for a National Day of Atonement issued by Minister Louis Farrakhan, the head of the Nation of Islam, who called last year for 1 million black men to come to Washington, D.C. You know, so this is just amazing. That was one quote.
And I like how you just said, Dr. Ava, that these are not just emotional commentary. It is people bearing witness to some aspect of his life. You know, as we know, Master Farah Muhammad gave the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad 104 books to read. And all of those had aspects of Prophet Muhammad's life, peace be upon him. And as Brother Demetri wrote this book, and that's one of the things I want us to say in defending Farrakhan, I've been with Dr. Richard since 1991 and with you, Dr. Avon, since 1996. And both of you and Brother Demetri have showed me scholarship in how to defend, not just rhetoric, not just emotion, but on actual facts of defense. So as Brother Demetri said about his book, it's just not somebody, yeah, I love that man, he's a good person. The quote that you read, this man doesn't have to even like him. He could be against Minister Farrakhan, but he had to bear witness to the reality of what happened. The reality is Minister Farrakhan called a million-man march and nearly 2 million men showed up. Whether you like him, disagree with it, doesn't matter. You have to, like I said, you was compelled to bear witness to the truth. That's what's so good about the book when we talk about research and scholarship. And that's one character or one good thing about the book that people should read and look at.
Well, you know, and he said it changed American politics. So that's a profound statement, because the mission is the resurrection, you know, the spiritually and mentally dead. And just in the course of moving toward the ultimate goal, look what he does.
I was just gonna, you know, just bear witness to what Brother Terrence was saying, in that in the introduction that we put in front of the book is entitled "Mixed Feelings and Controversy," which of course is borrowed from the great historic lecture that the minister did at the Final Call Building, which also became study guide number one in the self-improvement study guide series. But we looked at the pattern of reaction to the ministry of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan as the struggle against prophetic and revolutionary magnetism. And essentially what we were saying is that, you know, with the minister, he is a man who magnetizes even his enemies, and they are essentially put in a conflict because they are drawn to an individual. They are drawn to a man that they have been taught that they're supposed to dislike. They've been taught that they're supposed to hate. Maybe what he teaches does violence to previously held beliefs or viewpoints that they have, but yet they find themselves drawn to him. And we talk a little bit about, you know, this kind of moth to a flame kind of phenomenon wherein, you know, the moth is attracted to the flame because it has light, it has heat, it has energy, it has movement. And yet if the moth comes too close, he will become consumed by the flame. And so as we analyze some of these quotes, we find a definitive pattern of a reaction to the minister that is quite intriguing, because, you know, as we're talking about, you know, you would expect members of the Nation of Islam to laud the minister's accomplishments and his greatness. You'd even, you know, maybe say black people would say nice things about Minister Farrakhan. But when you see a man like Minister Farrakhan impacting all of these diverse kinds of people, you know that he's something special, and it brings to mind what was talked about or mentioned of Jesus in the New Testament, where his enemy said, you know, that if we don't do something, you know, the whole world will believe in him.
Yeah.
And I think that this collection bears witness that Minister Farrakhan is that man.
Well, that we're going to go to the phone shortly, but I want to read another one. This is Gwendolyn Brooks, the legendary Pulitzer Prize winning poet, and I just feel this statement. Farrakhan, we don't have tea. I have met the avidly assaulted one once. About a quarter century ago, a woman poet, then a Muslim, brought him to meet my husband and myself. He was impressively relaxed. He brought no guards, no guns. We were impressed by his warm eyes, his kind patience, flexible dignity. He listened to our ideas. He listened to every word we said.
Come on.
He waited for us to finish our sentences.
Mm-hmm.
He never interrupted. Today, interruption is an art.
Mm-hmm.
He did not feel the need to pastor. At least he didn't pastor. He did not ask us to join anything. This man I have not seen since. He is, however, a member of the Black family. He is a family picture. I look at the picture. I don't want to forget that this individual has saved a lot of sick-souled, gasping, barefooted blacks no one else cared to save. He has fed them, medicated them, detoxicated them, schooled them, thus making many of our lives, homes, and little children a smidgen safer.
That's from a poet. She really did it.
You know, Sister Ava, as I listen to you read these, you know, I'm like, man, Sister Ava should really do the audio version of this book. And you really make those quotes live.
This is priceless, Brother Dimitri.
That's right.
Let me go to the phones. We got Brother Keith. He's been holding for a while, because we look up and it'll be 10 seconds left. But we've got Brother Keith calling out of, this is the Atlanta area. Welcome to Elevated Places, Brother Keith. Assalamu alaikum.
Well, I guess salam, Sister Ava, and Assalamu alaikum family.
Salam.
Well, I have a comment. Well, I put it like this for the Malaysian airline. I was watching the local news. They had this former captain used to fly the same planes. It made me feel so good that the white man was baffled. He was clueless. He said he'd been teaching flying planes for decades, and he got all type of simulations. He said they never came close to anything like this. So I say this, it takes a God to realize a God. The old saying, they say real recognize real with a God. Yeah, Elijah Mama said it takes a God to deal with the God. So I'm happy that it's a greater power we're only seeing today. A brother, I was talking to a brother. He said, brother, if it weren't for Masrur Muhammad and Brother Will or the Elijah Muhammad, you can damn near say that there is no God but the white man. So,
amen.
So
that's what we were saying till then.
That's right.
So that's all I got to say. I'm only enjoying the conversation,
well, that's,
but I'm
that's
just glad.
That's good.
You know,
I'm just glad
it's a power that's on the scene that's greater than this white man. Cause this is crazy.
That's
so
right.
We should, as Robin Harris used to say, we ought to be happier than a runaway slave.
That's right.
But, you know, to Brother's point, that's been the perennial thought in my mind is that right after the ministers closed down the time and what must be done and completed the Savior's Day message, he makes a massive display of power. Because my mind was asking, what will be the lesson no matter what the outcome? No matter what the outcome, the people of the earth have never witnessed their artificial God, as Brother Keith just pointed out, so confused.
That's right.
And every day they have a different thought. And now they're over in the Indian Ocean looking for it.
Yep.
They've
and
abandoned
they, you know, they
its original pattern.
Mm-hmm. You know, they come up with reports and encounter reports. I mean, things change every 15 or 20 minutes. They're,
exactly.
You know, they're all up in the air. But, you know, the minister makes a statement, and then Allah works. Then the enemy tries to deal with it. You know, so it's a very interesting situation. You know that Allah plans to show himself in terms of the wheels so that people can see it. But the enemy would like to take an opportunity to take one down. So this is how we got into that conversation, Minister Ava, on what possibly happened. But we have to accept that there's a war going on. You
That's
know?
Right.
And the enemy, like Pharaoh of the Bible, is just not going to give up just because you say you got God on your side, because if he gives up his power as God, then it has no more reason to be here, because that's the only reason that they are here is to be God over us, and once they cannot be God over us, then they might as well just, like Clint Eastwood said, you know, take the gun and go into the closet and blow their brains out.
Yes, sir.
So that's the stake. So they're just not going to submit just because we say we got power, our God has power. So, you know, we were just speculating that if I was the devil, what I would do is that since we can't sneak up on the mother plane or the baby ships, why not do a Trojan horse type of thing? Why not do a Lusitania type of thing? Why not weaponize the passenger planes, you know, that are not supposed to be weapons, and put weapons on there, and then when a baby plane gets close to one of them, we shoot it down. And, of course, we know that the people who fly the baby plane are able to read minds and thought travel at 24 billion miles per second on average. So by the time they make a thought, they respond. They can't even pull the trigger before their response. And so this may have what happened over the ocean there. And like the article I sent you, they admit that there were 20 people on that plane involved in electronic weaponry. What were they doing
people.
On that plane? 20 scientists dealing with electronic weaponry. What were they doing? Were they experimenting with some new weapon that can knock down a baby plane and they themselves got knocked down? I don't know. But it's something to think about. But there is a war going on, and like Mr. Farrakhan said, in terms of these black budgets, they're getting money to do stuff, not telling American people what they're doing. And because they're at war with God, they can't tell people they're fighting God. So they call it a black budget because they're after the black God.
That's right. And as I pointed out also, the unique thing about this set of circumstances is this didn't occur in the United States, and it did not occur under the jurisdiction of the United States, which part of the
right.
what is necessary for a successful conspiracy to deceive the people is control over the situation. And,
right.
you know, as we're all talking about, Pharaoh's worst nightmare is being exposed as an inferior power. And now you're going to start hearing the mumbling. They said that the relatives of the passengers were throwing bottles the other day at Malaysian airline officials. You know, these are Chinese, as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said. They're fighters. They like to fight. They're the last people in the process Yaqub put in motion before the white man. So they have a lot of they're fighters, and they're demanding to know what happened to my loved one. Some of them are saying that after the plane went off radar and did not arrive, they were still able to call cell phones, and the cell phones were ringing. So if the plane exploded in the normal fashion as a result of weaponry produced by this world, that wouldn't have happened. But a superior power is able to remove something from this entire dimension. It can be removed intact and just pulled out of this dimension entirely. You know, and so one other expert had said that whatever happened, in order for there to be nothing from the cockpit, nothing from any of the computer equipment, whatever happened took place within 7 seconds. Because if it took 8 seconds or longer, they would have got some kind of signal from the computers. And these are the most advanced state-of-art computers that there are. But when Dr. Ridgely sent me that article that you had these 20 weaponry experts, scientists on that flight, and we know the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said there is no such thing as a coincidence. So we're going to go back to the phones because people want to talk to Brother Dimitrik and talk about the book and the events that are unfolding. And of course, you know, Brother Dimitrik, you're so devoted to the minister's defense, and he is so grateful that Brother Dimitrik and other brothers jumped up to his defense on their own, just out of love for him, growing weary of these assaults, and knowing that what the minister is teaching is true. And they said, we're going to start pulling together evidence from the enemy, that the enemy has already pulled together. And so you get Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews, Volume 1 and 2. You get Defending Farrakhan. You get Who Do They Say I Am? And in this, we are also building the library and reading source for the new world, the new material that our children will be studying. So we've got... Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Salam. I know you are ready to come on tonight.
Oh yeah, we got Brother Dimitrik, the juice on there.
Come on,
that's right.
Oh, Brother Flight Lieutenant Dr. Ridgely, and the most powerful black woman on the planet. I tell you, this is heaven. This is heaven on earth.
Elevated places, that's what it is.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that plane, Dr. Ava. They're saying now that the plane could have actually gone 40 miles further. And the scary thing is that they have navigated the waters to the bottom, and they don't even see a cigarette lighter. I mean, this is a very strange event. But, you know, this is the time and what must be done. But if you remember, the current plane that they just built is like $486 billion, and they tested it. And this plane had a problem with its balance against turbulence. So they got to go back again and redo it. Who is this war against? You own the East.
Come on.
And the people in the ground are dead. So your adversary is in the air. But you won't tell anybody. You know exactly what's going on.
That's right, the battle.
I want to pose a question. especially to the people who are not thinking correctly. Why is the government, why are they and their colleagues even concerned with a black man of whom they say has no value at all?
Good question.
They said that he's no good to his people. So what war are you fighting except a fight with Allah God, which you cannot win? Some years ago in Mas Mariam, I believe it was in 1996, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan was speaking, and he said these words. He said, the more you attack me, the bigger Allah will make me grow. And if you look at the time and what must be done, and if you look at the enemy scrambling for protection, they're not scrambling to fight. They know the season and the reason for the season. And all we have to do is follow the economic blueprint and follow the Nation of Islam right into paradise. And I thank you for sharing these words. And Brother Demetrius, I met you somewhere along the way, and I just can't think of where it was. But I'm just elated to hear your voice, brother. Just keep up the wonderful work. The nation is full of scholars.
Brother, thank you so much. I really appreciate your encouragement. And I think that, you know, as we all have discussed, you know, sometimes people, you know, criticize the believers, you know, for perceiving reality differently. And I was reading some commentary on social media where people were criticizing believers for thinking about the wheel with respect to this missing plane in Malaysia. And I thought to myself, you know, this must be a person that, you know, has no knowledge of the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, because this entire story, I mean, it's dripping with references to the teachings, specifically when you consider Malaysia has one of the world's most populous Muslim populations.
Exactly.
It is in the South Eastern Asia, near the place where the Honorable Elijah Muhammad says that the wheel was built. It's likely, reasonably speculation, that there could have been people from Malaysia who participated in the building of the mother wheel. And as Brother Ilya Rashad points out in his excellent book, UFOs and the Nation of Islam, there is a region of the water in that part of the world near the Nipponese Islands that is similar to the Bermuda Triangle, where ships have historically gotten lost. Is an area of high magnetic flux, according to his research, and is known by navigators of the sea to be a very difficult place to navigate through. So I just think that, you know, I thank Allah for the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, because it helps us to do what Allah says in the Holy Quran that the believers must do, and that is to take Allah's color, for he is best at coloring, or to take his view. And so unlike many of our brothers and sisters who could look at this kind of news coverage and be in bewilderment, like most people, we're able to see more into it, and we're able to intelligently speculate, as everybody speculates, but we're able to have our speculation approximate very closely to what the truth actually is. And
exactly.
So, again, to all of those who would mock the believers, I would just respectfully say you should go and read the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and remember, as the old saying goes, truth is indeed stranger than fiction.
Come on. That's right.
That's right.
That's exactly right. I'm going to read another quote from Who Do They Say I Am? And, of course, Henry Louis Gates, Jr., certainly is not a member of the FOI.
Junior? I like what you said there. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. But listen at his interview. He actually questioned 5 masters of black sacred oratory to give a professional assessment of Minister Farrakhan's message at the Million Man March. Mm-hmm. Reverend Wyatt T. Walker of Canaan Baptist Church, Harlem, legendary preacher. Listen at what he said about the minister's speech at the Million Man March. Even though I have my quarrels with Louis Farrakhan, I would say that on a scale of 10, he was about a 12, oratorically speaking. Okay? Now, the Reverend James A. Forbes, Riverside Church in Harlem, another legendary church, quote, "As a piece of communication, it was an extraordinary moment. In terms of style, especially in his public condemnation of the president and whites and so forth, there was a balance of courtesy and critique that I liked." This is blowing me away. I'm sorry. I'm just all up in this thing.
Mm-hmm.
People, this is new and different, this compilation, Who Do They Say I Am? All right, we've got Brother Hoyle, and he's got a comment. And let's get his mic open. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Hoyle.
Well, alaikum salam, family, and Dr. Ridgely, and Brother Terrence, and my brother, Brother Demetrius. Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Well, alaikum salam, Brother Hoyle.
Assalamu alaikum, soldier. I got your book right in front of me, brother. And I want to mention earlier about what Brother Demetrius was saying on a talk show. We know if it was, they were talking about the flight missing, and I had called in and gave him a little insight on the wheel and mother plane, and they were trying to make a little mockery about it. I don't know if you heard it, Brother Demetrius, but we know who that was. But you know, it's going to come, like Minister said in that interview with the author. It's going to be evident, and you won't have to. They're going to be seen everywhere. But getting to your book, Brother Demetrius, I like a part out of here by Time Magazine. It says in a historic cover for Time Magazine's February 28, 1994 edition, Time did a survey of black America's view of Minister Farrakhan. They found that 73% of black people were familiar with the minister and that 66.7% held a favorable view of him. The survey was conducted via a telephone poll. Poll respondents were asked several questions about Minister Farrakhan, and the following results were compiled. And it says, someone who says things in a country should hear, that's 70%. An effective leader, 67%. Speaks the truth, 63%. Good for the black community, 62%. A role model for black youth, 53%. Someone you personally admire, 40%. A bigot and a racist, and they got 34% here. And ask if 364 African Americans familiar with Farrakhan, sampling error is a plus or minus 5%. But that's a good one right there. But all of these quotes are awesome, you know. And especially the this is a must read right here. And I just want to congratulate Brother Demetrius and Brother Yili Rashad, the two one of the powerful scholar brothers in our mosque and in the Nation of Islam. And
yes.
I'm gonna let you respond to that. And Brother Demetrius, good, keep up the good work, brother. May Allah bless you and all of us who help the minister, because, like I said, once we help him, we're saving our own lives. So, assalamu alaikum, family.
Well, alaikum salam. Thank you
so much. Brother Hoyo, thank you for your encouragement, and thank you for all you do. Brother Hoyo is part of our mosque at Mosque 55, and for many years has been our top fisherman. And so certainly thank Allah for him and all that he continues to do. And appreciate your encouragement for what we're attempting to do, dear brother.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
But I would just like to comment on what Brother Hoyle said, and in terms of Brother Demetrius' work and Brother Ilya's work and other members in the Nation of Islam. These are products of the man who's producing a most valuable product. And where else and who else is doing such? And what could be wrong with such, except that it's the enemy of the human family that would want to ban such? So, and the part that Gwendolyn Brooks said that I thought most fascinating, I think Brother Demetri can bear witness, because we've been in the presence of the minister a number of times. And what's always fascinating me is that he listens. He
That's
actually
right.
listens to everything and remembers everything that you say. And he's
That's right.
genuinely concerned about what you're talking about. And he gets on us for not listening to each other properly. Am I right? Am I wrong, Brother Demetri?
No, you're right. I think all of us can bear witness to that. Certainly Minister mm-hmm. Ava, Brother Terrence as well. That is the minister. And I remember, and it may be in this book, one of his assistants from his years as the minister in New York, Brother Wayne Grice, commented similarly about how when they would be in staff meetings and the minister was always so open and eager to hear their reaction to things that he would say. And, you know, I think that that's one of the eye-openers for anyone who gets a chance to engage with the minister in a private setting, is that, you know, he preaches with such an authority, you know, because he has a divine authority, that to meet him and to see him really carefully listen to and study and reflect over what others around him say is really very eye-opening, because, you know, we know ministers and leaders of lesser quality who carry themselves personally in a very arrogant kind of way. But the minister is always the portrait of humility, a respect for human dignity, just a respect for life, as his great lecture series back in the 80s was about respect for life. The minister respects life. He respects the opinions of others. So I'm in agreement with you, Doc.
You know, and I just want to jump in here and just bear witness to what everybody is saying, because I was given an assignment a year or two ago when the minister Skyped. He did a Skype presentation to a classroom, and he wanted the copy if somebody recorded it. So the brother, Dr. Petri, Abdul Petri, gave me the disc, and I made sure when the minister was in New Jersey, you know, I gave it and took it to Brother Joshua's room. And then Brother Joshua had the nerve, I said, the nerve to say, oh, do you want to see if he want to see you? And I was saying in my head, no. I wanted to get out the room. I wanted to run. And then he comes back and says, yeah, the minister wants to see you. I was like, what do you mean the minister wants to see me? I'm just delivering a disc, a DVD. And I went and sat down, and we was in his suite, and Mary Alice was looking at me. She said, poor young man, he's so nervous. And when the minister, I couldn't think of nothing else to say about but giving him the report. And when I spoke with him, as Dr. Ava has said so many times, the minister is the same man in public as he is in private. He does not change. And he asked me questions about the students, how did they feel, what did they think. He was really concerned about the students that was in the room and their questions, and could they see me, could they hear. He remembered how the Skype presentation was, and it probably was weeks or months ago or a month ago or something, but he remembered everything that happened, what took place. But he's very attentive to every little detail. And, you know, and you're really focusing on making sure that you give him everything he's asking, because as you look at his countenance, he's thinking, he's analyzing, he's recording everything that you say. And it's just a beautiful thing to watch how God's spirit is on this man. The only thing I can get out of my personal thing was, can I give the believers the greeting? He said, not only can you give the believers of your city the greetings, he said, when you leave, every believer that you see, give them the greetings from me. And literally, every believer I saw when I left that room, I was giving them greetings from the minister. And I tried to do that to everybody I saw. But I bear witness to that. The minister, he doesn't take anybody's words for granted. He really listens. And that's why people love him. And he has a very sincere heart. You can feel the love and the presence of God in him.
That's right.
Yeah, I remember my my middle sister, who I have mentioned on the show, that she and my brother-in-law are wealthy. Brother Dr. Ridge and I laugh because we talk about some of our family and friends who are wealthy in the material world. They're like, well, we love the nation, but we're not walking away from this just yet. But all of my family has been bearing witness all week. I was so shocked that they said, oh, yes, we know about the mother plane. We know the plane is up there. And that in and of itself testifies to the fullness of time. But I was talking to my sister the other day, and she's one of these, she's bourgeois, but she's very indignant with white people. And she's a school principal in this very wealthy Jewish area. And she said, you know, I'm just about tired of them. And she's sharing this encounter she had with somebody who was supposed to be well-known. And she said, Ava, you know, you and I are underwhelmed. You know, we don't care about anybody. And she said, I don't care about no celebrities. In fact, the only person I ever met in my entire life that left me speechless was Minister Farrakhan. And then she said, do you remember when you introduced me to him and I was speechless? And I said, she literally, and you all know, of course, you can imagine I come from a family of talkers, as you can see with me. Her mouth literally hung open. And she said, this was just the other day, she said, Ava, he was an angel of light.
Come on.
Wow.
Okay. And just, you know, all of you are saying, I can only chime in. I have been with him more than 30 years. I have been with him in every setting imaginable. And all of you are so correct. He listens with love and concern and interest.
Yes.
He is interested in his fellow human beings.
Yes.
He cares about their pain. And, you know, one of the quotes in this book is you'll see when you get the book, C. Eric Lincoln, the late C. Eric Lincoln.
Yes, yes.
You know, who wrote Black Muslims in America. And I was at that dinner. It was at a dinner at the National House. And all kinds of prominent individuals were there. And, you know, C. Eric Lincoln, he was very much overweight, had some health problems. And he had difficulty. Now, this part I didn't see because this happened in the search room or up front. But C. Eric Lincoln talks about in Brother Demetric's book how he was having difficulty bending down because, you know, you have to remove your shoes in the home of any Muslim. He couldn't do it. The minister got down on his knees and untied his brother's shoelaces and removed his shoes for him. And he tried to stop the minister from doing it. He said, no. He said, no, brother. And then he massaged his feet.
That's right.
Come on.
That's right.
Now,
come on.
I mean, see, who do they say? If this is not Jesus, there is no Jesus.
Come on.
Is none. He reads into the hearts and minds of people, and it's not him, it's God through him. See, he gave himself up. He let Eugene Wolcott die, a very nice person, by the way. You know, it wasn't like that, because there's also quotes in here, and I remember this during the Million Man March. They looked through every grain of his life trying to find some dirt. the enemy. And listen at this. This is Elma Lewis, who was a friend of the minister's mother. You hear me? His mother's friend. He's a child. Now listen what she said about the minister as a child. Quote, he was the jewel of the neighborhood, really. In the church and school, wherever he went, he had a real talent for lighting up the world.
Wow.
That's as a child.
Mm-hmm.
They went in the banks, you all. They went in the banks, okay? Financial history. He has never in his life bounced a check.
Oops, I can't say that.
That's right.
Come on.
Never, never in his life. I mean, that happens sometimes by accident. You know what I'm saying? That
right.
Circumstances.
Right.
We really need to consider who he is. But I've seen European white people sit with him from Sweden. You know, people from the Middle East, from Africa, Jews, Jewish rabbis at dinner. He listens to what Gwendolyn Brooks said. He listens to every word you say.
That's right.
Well, you know, Minister Ava, I mean, I think we're really touching on something here that is a part of some of the thinking that I've had about a follow-up to this volume, which would include taking those quotes and doing some analysis of what specific characteristics in the minister are people responding to and compiling them to comprise a Farrakhan leadership profile that could be studied by really anybody that, especially those of us that want to represent him. Well, what are his characteristics that impact the people?
Wow.
His humility, his dignity, his courtesy, you know, his courage, you know, these kinds of things. So I think you're really hitting on something, is that in these testimonies, they reflect back on various character traits. And,
yes,
you know, I guess we could go so far as to say reflect back on how the minister manifests certain attributes of Allah through his person that touches people even when they don't want to be touched by him.
That's right.
Come on, brother.
So he's touching them beyond the barriers that they have erected. Oh, I don't like him.
Exactly.
He's anti-Semitic. I don't like him.
Right.
He's a Muslim. You know, I was really, I thought the quote from Alice Walker was very intriguing, because she was an example of having preconceived notions about the minister before she went to the Million Man March, or at least saw his speech at the Million Man March. And then she comes away with a totally different view of him, which, you know, again, he penetrated, you know, the barriers that she erected. And that's some divine stuff we're talking about.
It is.
You know?
It really is. A light-giving sun. We got Brother Mark has been holding, and he has a comment. Welcome to Elevated Places. As-salamu alaykum, Brother Mark.
Well, alaykum salam, Sister Ava, Brother Dimitri, and Brother Terrence.
Well, alaykum salam, Brother Mark.
Yes, ma'am. Sister Ava and brothers, y'all are hitting on every cylinder. I purchased your book, Brother Dimitri, and every part you all were talking about, I read about it. Part with C. Eric Lincoln, you know, that just brought tears to my eyes. You know, the minister taking the man's shoes off and washing his feet. A lot of us don't even like to wash our own feet.
Whoa.
You know, but he's doing that. And also, when Sister Ava was talking about Henry Louis Gates, And we definitely know he's not an FOI. And
right.
The police officer definitely knew he wasn't an FOI also. Anyway, the Reverend.
That's not nice.
Well, please forgive me. I'm trying to be fine as much as I can. But the Reverend who was talking about Minister Farrakhan, one of the five reverends, was our brother Henry Louis Gates, asked them to give a measurement of where they saw Minister Farrakhan. And like you were saying, Brother Dimitri, those barriers, the Reverend came out with his thing where, well, me and Minister Farrakhan disagreed on this, this, and this, basically. But then he had to bear witness that his oratory skills were 12, which went beyond the scale of 10.
That's right.
Yeah.
That barrier had been broken, and as Sister Abel was reading, and I read also where the way the minister handled Caucasian people to that brother's level of appreciation, where the minister doesn't back down. He spanks your backside, but he can spank your backside on a higher level. And
exactly.
The brother, so we have to learn how to be like that also in different settings. Mm-hmm. And one last thing, Sister Ava, Brother Terrence, and Brother Dimitri, my take on the that plane being missing?
Yes, sir.
I'm just thinking it might have been taken up by the mother plane, because I remember when the minister was talking about Allah's calling card.
Yes, sir.
Mother plane. Well, I think it might be another calling card coming, too, because it would be something to see that plane flying in the sky after about 7-8 days, and they don't know where it comes from.
Amen. Yeah, we talked about that, too. We talked about that as well, that the mother plane herself could have taken it. There's definitely the capability.
Yes, ma'am.
And you know, all these Muslims involved in this, like Brother Dimitri, you pointed out, Malaysia, and they're right next to Indonesia, which is the most heavily populated Muslim country.
That's right.
You know, of course, China is a superpower, and the Chinese people have great respect for the teachings insofar as the mother plane, and the technology of the mother plane, which is one reason China is so advanced in technology. And that whole part of the world, as you are pointing out, Japan, Korea, this is the area of the world where the ship was built, the mother plane was built. This is exceedingly powerful and should be a confirmation for the believers. If you're still entertaining any doubt about what our leader is saying. But thank you so much, Brother Mark, for your comments. We're coming down toward the end, so I want to get, we have Sister Doris calling, and she has a question for you, Brother Dimitri. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Doris. Welcome to Elevated Places.
Well, alaikum salam, and greetings to the panel.
Thank you, ma'am.
Hello. Alaikum salam.
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. I want to bring you up to see to a question and see if you remember. It was in between the early 70s and I say in late 80s. I had a sighting, and I was working in Somerville at John S. Correction Facility there, and I had a sighting of a UFO. I did not know that at that time. I just thought it was the light that they had put out in the, on the walkway where we walked down this particular aisle to go to the dormitory. And I saw the white lady that worked with me, Mrs. Glover, and I just stood there waiting for her so we could walk down the road together. When she approached me, I brought to her attention that this light was there. And I was explaining to her, why would they put a light here that's not throwing off any reflection, down on the sidewalk. And when I went turned around to get a response from her, she was not there. So when I got down to the dormitory and, one of the counselor opened the door, and I asked, I said, Mrs. Glover was with me, but she's not here now. What happened to her? And they said, well, She's in the fraternity. She, we're waiting for the ambulance. Well, at that time, I, to make a long story short, I called the Nation in Chicago, and I talked to Saul Alameen, who was from Richmond at that time, and I knew him well. And he told me to go see you. And when he told me what I probably had witnessed, I was shocked. I was like, what is wrong with people? Are they losing it? So when I came to see you and you asked me, did I know anything about the UFO, I told you no. And I thought something was wrong with you too. But I did my study, and I've had two more sightings since then. And I just wanted to share that, and I thank you. Assalamu alaikum.
Thank you for that testimony. It's going to grow and grow. It's,
well,
and
I like
you remember the minister called for that. Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
No, she made me to think about something about, you know, the subject of the wheel and its power when she mentioned her career in corrections. And, you know, I have a background there. And when the minister began to deal with this subject and, of course, the book that Ilya Rashad presented, I began to share this information with various brothers inside the institution. And I have to say that their reaction to this information has really been overwhelming. And it had, you know, I didn't think that it would have this kind of an impact, you know, on an inmate population. And I was talking with Ilya Rashad about it because you know how when you teach sometimes, and Minister Ava, I know you and everybody on the line knows this, you know, sometimes you see a light in a person's countenance that they really are getting what you're saying, and it's really making them feel good. It's not just an intellectual exercise, but it's really making them feel good. And I begin to see this in the countenance of various inmates with respect to this information on the wheel. And I was talking with Ilya Rashad about it, and he commented, he said that, you know, when you study all the evidence that there is related to the wheel, and you consider that for many of our brothers and sisters who are incarcerated, who do not have any hope for being able to come out of a correctional institution ever because of the great power of the U.S. government, this wheel represents a real and tangible hope that they can one day be free. And when he said that, I was like, wow, because I know the scriptures say in Isaiah, I believe it is, that God would open the doors of the prison houses.
That's
right. So she just made me to think about, you know, the great value of this subject and this truth to an area or a population of our people that a lot of times we forget about, but I have really seen it change the overall outlook on life of brothers who have life sentences. And I just wanted to share that because she reminded me of that when she talked about her experiences.
That's a beautiful observation, and we are at the end. We don't even have a minute left. I want to thank you, Brother Demetri. I just can't think of ending on a better note. We are about to be liberated. We really have been. We just have to accept it.
That's right.
But I want to thank you, Brother Demetri, author of Who Do They Say I Am? I want to thank Brother Terrence, Brother Dr. Ridgely, Sister LaDonna, Sister Rona, Brother Bobby, Brother Ashad and Timothy, team on the WDON Elevated Places, and all of you, the listeners and callers, let's just keep watching. Thank you all so much. May Allah continue to bless us all.
Thank you.
And remember, we are all preparing for a brand new season.